Our next speaker is Daniel Thanos. Daniel is Advanced Systems Security and, oh, I'm sorry, Daniel's the Director of Advanced Cybersecurity and Strategic Programs at TELUS Communications, Inc., where he provides leadership and technical skills to the TELUS team in the areas of advanced cybersecurity and strategy. He's also leading initiatives in advanced technical system domains that require newer, more novel cybersecurity methods, one of which I'd be interested in talking to you about particularly is smart grid, because I've, in my day job, do some work in that area. Daniel's also a regular speaker in advanced cybersecurity conferences, such as this one, so the floor is yours.
Before I begin, I want everyone to stand up, put your arms above your head, and just move your fingers. Everyone now. It's very important. Excellent, excellent. This is why data breaches happen. I just socially engineered all of you. So what I did, I took my position of authority and trust and abused it, and got you all to do something very silly. Of course, that was also just to get the blood flowing, because I know I'm standing in the way of everyone getting their adult drinks today, so I just want to get one last shot of blood into your head before I go through my presentation. So in my role in TELUS, I have the opportunity to really think about security in terms of the long game. I have the opportunity to lead R&D in the organization, and I really have the opportunity to begin to think about the fundamental dynamics of why a lot of these cyber breaches and vulnerabilities and all the things, these things that are occurring, why they're actually happening, and what are some paradigm-changing approaches we can begin to take as a community, with our vendors, with our peers in industry, with government, working all everyone together as partners. And as I've been thinking about this problem for a good decade or more, fundamentally, what we're facing is the fact that we have threat asymmetry. And what I mean by that is an attacker only needs to spend a few thousand dollars in malicious development or R&D to cause millions of dollars of damage to a defender. And also, a defender usually has to spend millions of dollars to counter what essentially is thousands of dollars of malicious technology. So it's fundamentally an economic and market problem. The market increasingly has become very liquid in cyber criminal organizations and markets. What I mean by that is, when I'm gonna go out and steal, let's say, 56 million IDs from Home Depot or Target or anyone else, there is a readily available market which allows me to rapidly convert that stolen data into money. So that's a liquid market. And because of this fact, it actually just encourages more threat actors and more innovation to get more spectacular breaches. And of course, it drives more cost, more risk on system defenders. And so under the current paradigm, things are looking actually quite unsustainable, because it's very, very hard to kind of tip that scale if we're just going to continue to do the types of things that we're doing. And the reality is that the key drivers, if you go look at what are some of the very basic fundamentals that are driving this, it comes down to insecure software, insecure hardware, and supporting supply chains in many cases. Because the adversary is just looking for that one vulnerability in a very complex network or in a very complex piece of software. And they're going to exploit it, and they're going to get in. And then they're going to have a multi-stage attack, and you're going to have all the issues that we have. And there's also another important thing to understand. The world we live in, the economic reality we live in, how the market's actually evolving, is that as security folks, we shouldn't be prohibitionists. We actually have to embrace technology innovation and business disruption. It's actually good. When you understand technological disruption and innovation, and you embrace it and actually use it as a strength in your security strategy, that is, you're actually getting in front of the innovation and securing it as it's emerging, rather than lamenting and wringing your hands, it's a very powerful thing. Because I guarantee you, none of us have the influence to put the genie back in the bottle. But all of us can be creative and can understand how to use the forces of innovation to actually begin to solve a lot of it, what would appear to be intractable security problems. But when you begin to look at the fundamental dynamics behind them, they're not that intractable. And there's two key things to understand. The idea of physical perimeters or even cyber perimeters or network perimeters or any type of perimeter, this idea of discrete hardware devices, that's all melting away. The reality is we all carry a mobile device with us. We do a lot on it. This is basically just an embedded, you know, personal computer. We're using this to directly connect the cloud services. We're bringing it into our organizations. That's reality. We have to secure it. We have to live with it. It's bringing innovation. And so the idea that your entire security strategy is going to be based on deploying a firewall here or there, all those notions are gone and dead now. The reality is what security is has to become a much more software-defined and distributed model. Security has to go everywhere and has to be present in all devices, because the other reality that we're facing is a little thing called the Internet of Things, or the Internet of Everything, as I've heard it called. And that's the idea of multiple black boxes in our lives, be they appliances or control systems that control our power grid, or increasingly even vehicles, which are going to form machine-to-machine networks with each other, communicate telemetry so they can try to avoid accidents. All of those things are going to become connected. They're all running software. And even more importantly is the software on those devices actually manifests something called an API, an application programming interface. In other words, these devices, not just that they're, you know, computerized and network, they're programmatic. You can literally send them programming commands in real time, and you can be building systems on top of these devices. And that's where the future is actually going. And so it's going to be very interesting, because for example, right now they mentioned one piece of malware called CryptoLocker that locks my phone. As cars become networked, I can't imagine not too far in the future someone's going to lock your car and tell you, send me a few hundred dollars so I can start it up again. It's not that far from occurring. So, evolution of cyber threat actors. So how did we kind of get here? How did this all start? To kind of look into the future, you kind of have to begin to understand where we came from. Hacking kind of started in its early days as a nuisance, a technical challenge. The first virus that was ever written was actually for a bunch of guys to play a game called Core Wars. It was a little research activity. But then, of course, it evolved over time. It actually became something more malicious and more focused. Amateur cyber criminals started to spring up. What did they usually do? You know, one-off data thefts. Maybe they'd steal a credit card here and there because they want to get something for themselves. They would do piracy for a little bit of profit. One-off frauds, a little bit of virus writing. But then things began to really rapidly evolve, especially from the late 90s onwards. We started to get to see hacktivists, very organized cyber criminal organizations that are very sophisticated. Now I would say in 2014, some cyber criminal organizations are using APT-like technologies like that nation states use to execute their heists. They're doing multi-stage attacks. You have terroristic actors. Right now their focus, I would say, is more in information warfare and cyber ops using social media, but they've already communicated an intent and a desire to develop cyber warfare capabilities just like nation states do. And disturbingly, especially with some irresponsible nation states, there's a lot of collaboration actually happening between all of these types of actors. There's a lot of technology transfer going back and forth. Some nation states, because they want to have deniability, may actually work with cyber criminal organizations for all types of reasons, industrial espionage or just classical intelligence gathering, and they can have an arm's length kind of relationship there and have plausible deniability. And we know there are nation states that will work with terroristic actors as well. So The threats are really rapidly evolving. The actors are becoming much more sophisticated. And throw into that the fact that digital currencies are now becoming a very viable financial instrument, and specifically anonymous digital currencies. It again creates that condition where you have more market liquidity and you're able to more easily transact in these underground markets, as some folks were showing us earlier. So how has cybersecurity kind of evolved over time? It used to be that attacks took weeks, then it moved to days, minutes, seconds. As our networks evolved, our cybersecurity technologies evolved. We had basic antivirus, we went to firewalls, some simple IDS, some anti-malware. Now we live in a world of SIMs and next-generation firewalls and WAFs and more advanced IPSs. I'm losing track of all the marketing terminology that kind of arises to describe all of these security technologies. And then as things move on, we're probably going to need to get into much more advanced threat intelligence and predictive security models and analytics, as was alluded to. But very importantly, virtualized and software-defined security and more distributed security models. So, as I promised, I was going to talk a little bit about software security and supply chain security. If you go back to some recent events, and now there's also been shell shock. I'm still recovering from shell shock. I was up at 4 o'clock in the morning testing for that when it hit our organization. We want to make sure we were secure and not affected. But the reality is all of these high impact breaches are occurring because of very simple, in some cases, very just subtle flaws in software that attackers have figured out how to exploit. The front end is, they need an exploit, they need something, a known weakness. By the way, most of the times they don't need what are known as zero-day exploits, that is exploits that no one knows about. Most of the time, all they need to know is the fact that you haven't patched something. The practices found in industry sometimes are very poor. People don't have 0 days, they have like 1,000-day patches that should have been patched 1,000 days ago. So most successful attackers don't even need to use a zero-day. And the other reality is they use social engineering. So social engineering is like what I just showed you guys. I'm just sending you an email, something specifically crafted. I get you to trust something. I get you to click something. I'm in your network. And the fun begins. Then I start multi-stage attacks. In the case of Target, one other interesting thing to show sophistication is the attackers in this case actually use the HVAC system to actually get into Target's network. They understood and figured out that the HVAC vendor was essentially using weak credentials there, and that's what they actually use as their entry point. And then that's how they actually got in. So again, these breaches are spectacular. People want to think that in all cases it's very advanced, but when you begin to understand a lot of the fundamental dynamics, there's a lot of low-hanging fruit we can go after. Not all of these breaches are based on very, very sophisticated cyber attacks or very sophisticated malware. So the state of software security. The reality is actually most of the practices in the field are very mature. I've lost count of how many manuals and books and practices exist that teach developers how to write secure code. It's definitely not a problem. Just the issue is that the practices are not consistently applied. Supply chains have gotten very complex. A hardware product is these days a software product, really under the hood, and has millions of lines of code. And that code comes from various sources. It comes from suppliers that are based all over the world. It comes from open source, where you don't have necessarily the same quality of control you would have over something that's commercial. Doesn't necessarily mean it's bad. It just means that it's not necessarily looked at in detail. I've heard the arguments where, well, if it's open source, everyone's looking at it, it's automatically good. That's not really materializing in reality. Like when you look at some of the most spectacular bugs we've been dealing with, it's come out of actually the open source community. So if we think of Heartbleed, when we think of Shellshock, they've come out of there. And because that software has become so pervasive across so many systems, The issue is when you discover that one bug, it has very wide implication and impact. And a lot of that software is even getting, again, into embedded system and into IoT systems. And that's a risk. That's why we have this homogenization or commoditization of a lot of systems. Increasingly, all the systems that we're depending on every day are being built from very few different types of code bases. So again, when you find one vulnerability, it has very, very, very wide impact everywhere. But the good news is that we can, with some very minor and incremental changes, we can start to see a lot of payoff in this area. But it's not based on technical strategies or simple education campaigns. It's we have to actually begin to use the market more in our favor. So supply chain security, it's probably not as mature in the commercial sector, definitely in high security organizations, the military. They understand supply chain security very well. They have high assurance certificates and the AL certifications and all of these things, which are good. But the reality is a lot of those certifications are static in nature. And they don't take the dynamic nature of software into account. So I can EAL certify a system, but that system can eventually be proven to have vulnerabilities in the software. And oddly enough, the way a lot of certifications work, I can't actually change that software and keep my certification. So I have to literally run my system insecure in order to be keeping the certification. So that leads me to conclude that we essentially need to look at a new model, what I call more of a trustworthy model. And that is looking at security as more of a domain of continual verification, ensuring that there are base practices in place that demonstrate that I can test against, that show that the software has been developed securely, has been tested adequately, that it is trustworthy, instead of having to worry about very high-level certifications. So market-driven strategy. So fundamentally, cybersecurity is a demand-side economic problem. There's an adequate supply of expertise. There's adequate understanding. I've heard it said in far too many venues that there's just no expertise out there. We just don't know what to do. It's not true. There are lots of established practices. The issue is market incentive. We have to get everyone in the community, vendors, system integrators, operators, we have to create the market incentive so that it rewards the behavior of building things more securely. And we have to begin to commoditize the verification process some more. So I should be able to run some relatively simple tools to prove security around key aspects of my secure development lifecycle as I'm building a product, and be able to demonstrate that to the person that's one level up from me in the supply chain, so that they know as they're integrating that technology into their system, and as others are integrating my technology into their system, that there's been a proper level of security followed, and there's some attestation there, and that can provide competitive advantage. It could be something that a vendor advertises. When I look at longer term strategy, I'm not going to get too technical on everyone here, but it has to do with actually looking at the security of the code itself, doing much more detailed analysis of it, in a more clever way, finding the vulnerabilities that can exist there and exercising them before the software is shipped or the hardware is shipped as well. Doing much more intelligent forms of binary, static, and dynamic analysis. That's essentially being able to look at code, even if you don't have the source code, as a black box, and being able to determine if it's secure or not, if there's backdoors there or not. And finally, applying some adversarial methods and next-gen network security. So by adversarial methods, the reality is that when I find one vulnerability in one piece of code somewhere, and it's applicable to 1,000 or even 1,000,000 different systems, that happens because there's actually no diversity in those systems. And interestingly enough, adversaries have a technique called polymorphism. When they develop malware, They develop malware so that it changes, so that the antivirus scanner can't catch it. But wouldn't it be interesting if we could begin to actually use that technology in favor of the defender? So what if we began to use polymorphism in such a way that you could not, just because you found a vulnerability in one piece of software, it didn't universally apply everywhere? If we began to think of the problem this way, we fundamentally change the economic dynamics, because now an adversary would have an intractable problem to solve, because it would literally be impossible for them to develop a piece of malware, to develop that exploit for a million different iterations for the same piece of software. So these are some examples of some long-term research that would provide value. It was already discussed that applying machine learning methods in our network security monitoring, I think, is going to be a key area. Big data is thrown around a lot, but it's more than that. Actually, big data is essentially just statistical analysis. Statistical analysis are actually rather simple forms of machine learning. It's not actually very sophisticated machine learning. In fact, you can do machine learning that requires much less data, and you can do machine learning that actually leverages much more domain expertise and human intelligence in the process, and it can be much more effective within this domain. And finally, two final points, very important. We have to develop the human firewall. So we already talked about the fact that, you know, social engineering is something that happens very easily because humans by nature are very trusting. We kind of misplace that person-to-person trust when it comes to the cyber realm. We think that the person that's really writing that email is really, really someone that we trust on the other side. We can't think of the fact that it could be someone else lying to us. So we have to develop that savviness. TELUS has a program called TELUS Wise. We spend a lot of time actually educating the community how to be cyber safe. And that's something that a lot of folks in TELUS volunteer for and go and do. And so that's about building a human firewall, certainly out in our communities, but also important to build those programs within your organization. And finally, software-defined model of security as we move to IoT and other interesting things. Security has to become virtualized. It's going to go out onto all of these devices. It's not going to just be at the perimeter. It's going to be everywhere, and it's going to have to essentially become part of the fabric that we're building out there. And for a little plug for my team, one of them came all the way from Ottawa to be here today. So go team TELUS. But, and man, that's a big eye chart. But here's the bottom line. TELUS has like a very comprehensive team in this area. We do a lot of advanced stuff. We also deal with government folks and a lot of enterprises, small, medium-sized enterprises. We're very humble. We understand we don't know all things, but we're building a good ecosystem. We work with a lot of partners. And we take a really strategic approach to trying to solve people's security problems. And we do look at the fundamental dynamics of your business and of the solution that you're going to need. And that's it.